You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we don't give you full-size candy bars. We give you notes that say, stop being so fat, fatty. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski. And if you enjoy your trip today, please tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism. Alternately, you can pick up a t-shirt at themidside.com/store. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
I really stopped being into Halloween about 11-ish, which I feel is over under young. But it was because I thought, do people not know that stores sell candy year-round?
Like, but it's the elusive thing of getting things for free. Like, you lived out here in California. Have you ever gone by Yogurtland or Krispy Kreme on the day where they're giving away a free donut or free yogurt?
Yeah, that is the day that I do not go.
But it's the day that everyone does go, and they stand in line for 3 hours to get something that they can buy for a dollar normally.
Yeah, I never got that. It's like Dunkin' Donuts, free small coffee. Otherwise, 79 cents.
Yeah.
So I'm going to wait 3 hours in line for something worth 79 cents.
But it's
economics
free.
Economics does not compute.
It's math. People don't value, they don't consider time valuable. It's just the money concept of it.
Now, if Tesla has a free car day, that's a different story. Since I'm already subsidizing it anyway. Okay.
Also joining us this trip, from the hills of white privilege, James Elias.
I enjoyed Halloween, and then one day I just lost my soul, and I don't enjoy anything anymore. Daniel, what's wrong with you?
Wouldn't losing your soul make you enjoy Halloween more?
That's a good question. No, I fucking love Halloween. I was a cat, and, well, here's what happened. Mackenzie wanted to be a cat, but she also didn't want to be a basic bitch. So I said, okay, well, how about you be a cat? Because she wanted to be a cat. Like, she wanted to be a cat because she'd look really cute. And I'm like, okay, I'll be a dead cat. And then, so together we'll be Schrodinger's cat.
Oh, I see.
Except if you follow James on Facebook, you would see this picture. And James, I hate to break it to you. You don't look like Schrodinger's cat. You don't look like a dead cat either. You just look like you're in cat ears and black, and then there's like you put red paint on your face by accident.
It's like someone missed their face with lipstick.
Yeah, exactly.
I did not. The Schrodinger's cat thing is interesting. The last time I dressed up, actually, Justin, was when I lived in L.A., and I was somehow convinced by... I don't know, people, I guess, to go to the West Hollywood Halloween celebration.
Yeah, that's always interesting.
Feels like 300,000 people packed into 8 blocks. And literally, we walked through the crowd. It took about an hour and a half to get from one end to the other. And I said, okay, so what are we doing? And everyone in the group said, oh, we're just going to walk back. It's like, we came here to walk through 100,000 people and then walk back through them?
Yeah, you see the shit show.
And then from that moment on, I decided never to celebrate Halloween as an adult again.
Isn't that everything is an adult, though? Isn't that every event is an adult?
But, like, usually it's like, oh, we're going to go to Disney, we're going to wait in line for 2 hours, but then we'll get 30 seconds of a roller coaster. This was, let's push through 100,000 gay peoples. And then get to the end and then just do it again.
How dare you mention the fact that they were gay as if that was relevant?
It was hyper relevant, as I was molested more that day than any day in my life.
It was just a crowd of Harvey Weinstein.
Hashtag me too.
Yeah, but it seems like sometimes people just like to be violated and to give up their privacy. Mm-hmm. Do you want to know what I'm talking about? Stick around for... The News with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really
In a bid to make Jeff Bezos the most hated man in all of the world, Amazon's new service will allow drivers to enter your home to deliver packages.
Oh, you paused for like a slight second there, and you were like, enter your, and I was like, where is this going? Where is this going?
Jeff Bezos will enter your home.
You. Okay, Amazon announced today that it is launching a service that allows a driver not only to drop a package off at your doorstep, but also to go inside your home, even when you are not there to make a delivery. The tech giant's new in-home delivery feature, Amazon Key, was announced on Good Morning America, and it lets customers opt to employ an app, a camera, and a smart lock to oversee when parcels are delivered inside their homes.
Oh, my dog.
Quote, a lot of customers would love having their packages delivered in their home even when they're not there, said Peter Larson, Amazon's VP of Delivery Technology. Amazon Key works by alerting customers by phone when a driver arrives at their home and scans their package. This triggers a signal to Amazon Cloud that verifies the driver. Then the cloud unlocks a smart lock on your front door. You can also let in friends, family members, quasi-intelligent pets remotely, whatever you want to do. It's up to you, and then the camera records immediately when it comes in, and you can watch the delivery live or later in case you're interested. Justin, are you going to be the first one to sign up for Amazon Key?
I don't know if I'm allowed. You said smart technology on the door. Mm-hmm. Like, can any place in California have smart technology? Because all our housing was built in the 70s and hasn't been upgraded since, I believe.
Yeah. Your door might be a dumb door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, don't say that. It's a California door, so it will get offended. It is an intelligence challenge door, okay?
Yes. It's a low potential for income door.
Yes, exactly.
That's the state of Illinois. defines people.
Is this a delivery service, or is this Amazon?
It's an at-risk door.
An at-risk door. Just because I live in Anaheim with a lot of Mexicans, James, that's racist.
That's right. All of the doors are at risk.
But, Daniel, is this a delivery service or is this Amazon's bid just to get into the amateur porn game? There's a camera, there's a delivery man, and they show up unexpectedly and give you a package.
I'm here to fix the cable.
I never thought of it like that, Justin, but that is a new revenue stream for Amazon, who seems to be in the business of selling everything. Why not sex?
Yeah. Here's the thing that I can't figure out about this story. I can't figure out if it's a good thing or a bad thing. Because when I think back to, like, you know, the traditional, like, oh, American values in the 50s, blah, blah, blah. Like, wouldn't we say, like, oh, and we trusted people enough to not lock our doors. So, like, isn't it good that we're just, like, trusting Amazon enough to, like, let random delivery guys into our homes? But at the other hand, in today's day and age, are we really trusting Amazon to let random delivery guys into our home? I mean, I get an Uber sometimes, and out of all of the Ubers and Lyfts I've been in, I finally had one dude the other night that I was like, oh yeah, you're a good dude. I like you. Like, I get a good vibe from you. Usually it's like, I get the vibe, you're not capable of doing anything else, therefore you're doing this. I don't actually want to be in your car right now, but I've committed to this through the app, so please don't kill me. Like,
that's just because you live in Anaheim, though. Like, I don't regularly have that experience.
Although it was funny, someone made a meme. I sound like an old person. That was a PowerPoint presentation. It said, 1990, your parents tell you, don't meet people you meet on the internet and don't get in strangers' cars. And then 2017, literally summon strangers from the internet to get in their car.
Right, and now Jeff Bezos and his need to escalate everything, which, by the way, I think he's past Elon Musk in his need to escalate everything, but in his need to escalate everything, he's now said, oh yeah, you call random strangers and get in their cars? Well, now we're going to send random strangers to your apartment and go inside and drop stuff off.
That's right.
What an evil man.
Overall,
I think he should escalate everything.
I think technology is good. And we'll figure it out. And if it doesn't work the way we want it to work, the market will correct it. And overall, this is a good thing. Now, the one issue here that is a little scary to me is the hackability of this stuff. And Amazon's answer to that was just, oh, it's encrypted. It's encrypted, which is basically meaningless nowadays. That doesn't mean anything. So is your phone, and that could be easily hacked. So if someone can stand outside my door with a laptop and get in, that's a little scary. I mean, at least, you know, when you're burgling a home, that's the verb. When you're burgling a home, you have to put some effort into it, right? You have to learn how to pick a lock. You have to bust it down with like a shoulder roll or something. But
you have to make sure there are no 8-year-old blonde kids left there by themselves.
That's right. Exactly. You know, like our forefathers and the forefathers before them. But if some nerdy weakling can get into my home just by simply typing in a few lines of code, that feels unfair to me. I don't know.
That feels like maybe an episode of CSI to me.
Yes.
Maybe the new version of Home Alone will be the kid. Like, he won't even ever see the people who are trying to break into his house. He'll just be on the computer, like, preventing them from hacking into his, like, computer, his home computer, basically.
Alternatively.
It'll just be him writing code and then them writing code or whatever it is you do when you hack. I don't know what that looks like. But,
well, if you were to believe TV, it's just someone in a dark room pounding keys on a screen that's only green text.
Just give me 4 more minutes to hack into the mainframe.
That's right.
It's so visually uninteresting to hack that what they did is what Jano described, that's how they came up to visualize it. And in the movie Swordfish, they were like, how do we make this more interesting? Oh, let's add a timer and have him get a blowjob from Halle Berry at the same time. That is the only way we can make hacking interesting.
Alternatively, James, to build on your new Home Alone reboot concept, how about the burglars get in the home, but they never actually see the kid because he's using all the smart home devices to kick their ass, like sending the Roomba after them and then like the Philips light on high blast and then, like,
I believe
the window
that
shades
that is the
plot up and
to
down.
The first Purge.
Yeah. Oh, that's in the Purge.
I think we have a concept now. We should definitely pitch this to a studio.
No, in the first Purge, it takes place inside Ethan Hawke's house, and he plays a rich guy where he bought smart technology to lock down his house at once a year on the Purge because the rich people are the biggest targets on the during the Purge. So I'm pretty sure this is the plot of the Purge.
No.
Huh. All right.
Simpsons did it. Or variation thereof. PragerU. I'm sure all of you people out there listening to the show have watched a PragerU video on the YouTubes. Well, conservative PragerU is now suing YouTube and Google over video censorship. Yes, the educational video outfit founded by conservative commenter Dennis Prager in 2011 has charged that Google is unlawfully censoring their videos, and this is free speech discrimination. Prager said in a statement that his company believes the internet giants are out to squelch conservative political thought by restricting access or demonetizing PragerU videos. Basically, what's happening is videos on controversial topics such as why isn't communism as hated as Nazism or what's holding the Arab world back were placed on restricted mode because they reportedly discussed, quote, hate and genocide or, quote, terrorism and genocide, respectively. No further explanation was given, and some of the videos were demonetized if they weren't restricted. Videos like Why America Must Lead, or The Ten Commandments, Do Not Murder, or Why Did America Fight the Korean War, or The World's Most Persecuted Minority, Christians. Less controversial videos like a video clip on forgiveness have been left alone. Justin, this brings up so many questions. But the first of which is this actually censorship? That's my favorite question to play.
Well, no, it's not censorship because Google is a private company that owns YouTube, so they can do whatever the fuck they want on YouTube. They could be like, we are going to block every video featuring cats because we want to destroy the internet.
60% of all videos blocked from Google. Yes.
They could do that. They have every right to. So it's not censorship in the sense of what we mean by free speech in the First Amendment, which is the government cannot censor. I mean, I guess in some weird decontextualized way. Wow. Decontextualized way.
I think we should add that to the repertoire of words. Anyway, go on.
It was a complete accident on my part. But yeah, on some weird decontextualized way, I mean, I guess Google is censoring people they don't like. But I mean, that'd be like saying I can't censor things I don't like in my house.
True. But
right, by not listening to every TV, by not listening to E, aren't you censoring them?
Right, or by telling people, like, you know, Jets fans aren't allowed in my apartment? Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're censoring Jets free speech. So what is PragerU to do here, then?
Well, I have a question before that. Can I ask a question?
It's your show.
Are Christians a minority?
If I guess in some sense.
I guess if you think about
more Muslims than Christians.
Yeah, if you think about it in that context, that they are.
Globally, there are more Muslims than Christians.
Right.
Yeah, and you could also just say globally there are more other religions than Christians.
Okay, fair enough. Minority. I didn't know what context they were using.
If you think about it, we're all a minority because there's only one of you.
Right, and no, I understand that.
Everyone else is, you know,
right.
It's this silly concept. But
yeah. No, what's the question you asked, Daniel?
What is, so two things. Good is not censorship. Totally on board there. But what is PragerU supposed to do? They've put in all this effort into a business plan where they're going to monetize their videos on Facebook, and now 50 of their 250 videos have been demonetized, 20% of their entire catalog. Doesn't this feel a little bait and switchy, at least?
On YouTube's part?
Yeah.
Yeah, it 100% is. They take advantage of them, make all the money they can off of them, and then they just demonetize them because they're trying to control the conversation. I mean, I can draw a direct link to this, to the stuff I was saying about Hollywood, where they take advantage of the actual people who are talented and then talk shit about them in order to keep their power structure. I mean, is that really any different from making money off of those people? It isn't. So the only alternative is, and I'll throw this to James, maybe he has another alternative, but I think the only alternative is somebody has to come up with a different platform. Right. They tried to do it with Gab as an alternative platform to Twitter, but they're just making these politically charged platforms because they think the primary of YouTube is a politically charged platform. And they think the primary of Hollywood is a political charged platform. We're seeing it psychological is what's going on here. So somebody needs to make a neutral, competitive platform where this doesn't happen. That's what I see as the only alternative. What do you think, James?
I think that is a very good alternative, generally speaking, but that still leaves Prager University screwed. But the worst thing they possibly could have done is, in this situation, is respond with the rhetoric they have, because they've undermined any part of their message that is good by, you know, by denying the property rights of YouTube, by making this into a quote unquote free speech issue. It confuses everything it is they're trying to achieve when they claim they're in favor of the freedoms the founders gave us. And it shows me that they just don't understand them.
Yeah.
That being said, like, should they take action? Yeah, they should have. I think this seems to me something along the lines of, like a breach of contract. You know, I think you could probably construe it somehow that there's a contract you're making when you put a YouTube video up. There's a contract that says, if it gets enough views, we pay you because we want content. You give us content, we give you money if you know, you get enough views. That's a contract.
Right.
But we demonetize you if your video contains these sorts of things. And their video clearly didn't. I mean, think of the insanity inherent in saying the video, why isn't communism as hated as Nazism? That was placed in restricted mode because it purportedly discussed hate and genocide and what's holding the Arab world back. That was terrorism and genocide.
Yeah.
This is insane postmodernist being coded into the algorithms of YouTube, or there are people like actually explicitly doing this. Cause you know, when you draw an equivalence between criticizing communism and genocide, what the fuck?
Well, like, I want to be clear.
How about the opposite? How about if supporting communism is pretty much genocide?
I want to be clear here for a second. I am not defending YouTube with what I'm about to say. I'm going to lead into a critique of YouTube. But based upon what you're saying, technically by discussing Nazism, you're discussing genocide. Technically by discussing the Arab world, you're discussing terrorism and genocide. So by following the letter of the law, they are demonetizing them based on their policies. The problem is, and I don't know if something legally can be done about this, because it, you know, you guys know me and you know I'm all about fairness and justice and everyone being treated the same way. Is there a way legally to say you need to apply your rules evenly? That seems like discrimination to me. I'm not going all ACLU, but I'm saying if you have rules, apply them equally. Don't create your own rules and then turn them into a living, breathing interpretation of your rules to just censor the people that give you bad PR or something. Do you get what I mean?
Well, I think you can make an argument like that, yeah. But it has to be an argument that doesn't somehow imply that they are censoring you. They are selectively, you know, voiding contracts in a way that is that is clearly unfair. That's the case.
Yes,
you have to
make. I agree now, completely.
Look, part of the argument here in court, I think, is going to be that Google's terms of service are so unclear that they use them to basically break contracts with people political ideologies they don't like, and they don't do it with political ideologies they do like. And I think that hopefully something good that will come out of this is simply that companies like Google or Facebook or whoever sells these kind of advertising will make their guidelines more clear. And maybe they will come out and say, look, if you have can you imagine though what would happen, even though I think this is where it should go, if Google came out and said, look, if you have a conservative viewpoint on something, we're going to be harder on your videos than we are going to be on progressive viewpoints because we think such and such and such and such. They have the right to do that as a platform. They just need to come out and do it if they're going to, one, have integrity, and two, not lose a bunch of business through a court battle.
Well, they're going to lose a bunch of business either way, because the entire value a YouTube provides is that you could go on there and literally see anything. You could literally see, I mean, like, short of, you know, dudes getting your heads chopped off, that's a whole different, you know, video site. But
I love how you went there and not porn. What are you trying to tell us, James?
You're into some sick shit.
This is a terrible business decision on YouTube's part to not be completely transparent on this, because they're missing the entire value of what it is they have to offer. Is that it's anything. You could go on there and see anything. It is the epitome of the internet. It's the world is open to you.
And maybe they will do that. I don't know. But the one thing I agree with you totally on, James, is that we've lost scope of any defense of ourselves or rights other than speech. This is something we've talked about on the show a little bit, but it's worth reiterating. Like, every single Supreme Court case now, for instance, no matter what the issue is, we have to find a way to protect it as if it's speech. The one that I'm thinking about in particular for this Supreme Court term is Masterpiece Cake Shop, which is whether or not you have to bake a cake for a gay wedding. No talk of economic liberty, property rights, like the fact that I own a bakery and I get to decide who's in it or not, or nothing like that. It's become a free speech issue that by making a gay cake, you're endorsing a message that you disagree with, like an expression message, by literally writing on the cake, and therefore it's a First Amendment issue. What happened to rights in this country that we have to shove everything into the hole of free speech? Do we have to fist free speech?
I mean, what
is what
that
I'm
means
asking.
Is it's the...
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No, it was just a horrible joke.
I guess that just means it's the only individual right that is still recognized. But regardless of the actual arguments Prager ends up making in court, he's making free speech style arguments publicly.
Yes.
Which will just erode the recognition of that this last individual right we actually understand as a society.
Yeah, agree. So one right we still protect, now we're going to basically make it meaningless.
Well,
yeah,
Daniel.
Daniel.
I agree with what you're saying, James. I agree with what you're saying. But isn't PragerU, kind of in a tough place rhetorically to get the culture on its side? Because, first of all, he's conservative. He's religious conservative. So isn't he going the angle he has to take? Because based upon what you're saying, Daniel, about how everything's free speech, and you bring up the cake example and the baking the cake, why is it that everything has to be politicized nowadays in that way? Isn't that a cognate of the fact that everything's free speech? You know, Taco Bell has to be a political company. Google has to be a political company. Like, I agree there are certain standards and certain values for a baseline that you should have, but now everything is, you're either in line with the social justice warriors or you're in line with the the alt-right. There's no just like, okay, this is the job I go to and I'm going to provide the best bicycle possible to anyone who wants a bicycle. It's only going to make bicycles for people who don't use fossil fuels. So if you drive a car with fossil fuels, you can't also own one of my bicycles.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Totally into that. I fucking hate that culture. I just want you to sell me a pizza or a goddamn bike. But at the same time, Prager is smart enough to understand that he is actually undermining his own cause in the long run by bastardizing the concept of free speech for this quote-unquote pragmatic end. Yes, he is using the rhetoric of the time, but ultimately, in the long run, that is going to be more detrimental to him and his cause than not doing that now. And that's
what
I think
agree.
Is sad.
I was just asking, what is the greater long-term issue here? Is it that everything's free speech, or is it that's everything politicized, or is that false dichotomy, bro?
FDB. Yeah. All right. Moving on.
Yeah, I think it merged there, yeah.
To a particularly interesting story from The Telegraph. Photo of a CAT scan and says, these two brains both belong to three-year-olds. Why is one so much bigger? Take a careful look at the image of the two brains. You can see this over at themidside.com. The picture of the brains of two three-year-old children. It's obvious that the brain on the left is much bigger than the one on the right, and the image on the left also has fewer spots and far fewer dark, fuzzy areas. To neurologists who study the brain and those who work to interpret these images, the difference between these two brains is both remarkable and shocking. The brain on the left, the bigger brain, has most of the fundamental areas present, and this child will grow up to be intelligent and empathetic and sort of an adjusted human being, but the child on the right with the less developed brain will not. They will most likely be less intelligent, have less empathy, and be more likely to become addicted to drugs and involved in violent crime. So what has caused the difference in these two brains? This is from the article. Quote, the primary cause of the extraordinary difference between the brains of these two three-year-old children is the way they were treated by their mothers. The child with the much more fully developed brain was cherished by its mother, who was constantly and fully responsive to her baby. The child with the shriveled brain was neglected and abused. The difference in treatment explains why one child's brain is fully developed and the other is not. Justin, what would your brain look like if we got a CAT scan right now?
Well, that's what the first thing I thought of when I read this story. I was like, Jesus, if my IQ is the way it is, it would be fucking off the charts. Like, if I was treated normally and cherished,
you'd be a marathon running Stephen Hawking.
Yeah. I mean, well, what?
I'm just imagining like a dude with like a wheelchair, like a high performance wheelchair.
Is that I meant you'd be Stephen Hawking, but with working legs. That was the joke.
Oh, right. I thought you were making an anti-concept joke. I was like, what?
Yeah, Daniel, don't put Stephen Hawking down as the paragon of intelligence. He's the biggest rationalist in physics. Since,
all right, fuck that guy. Fuck that wheelchair bad guy.
This went in a different direction. Let's go back to the story.
To the point.
So, I mean, I was making the joke about like being, you know, emotionally neglected. But the thing that stands out to me about this story is maybe finally we're seeing some positive results to feminism, in the sense that if we're going to be treating women equally to men, that means we have to be as critical to them in their roles as we are to men. Because my whole life, the one thing I heard, and maybe you guys can disagree and you heard different things, but to me, the worst parenting sin I heard growing up throughout my entire life has been being a deadbeat dad, which, you know, that is the worst thing a guy can do. But there was never any critiques of mothers and the wrong they could do to a child and what are the things they could do as wrong to a child. And then we start to see things like South Park, where we saw how abusive Cartman's mother is to him, where she wants all the attention, but she basically neglects him and doesn't cherish him, even though she gives the sense that she does. It's really that she's pretending to in order to get attention herself. Or the new show Mindhunter on Netflix is going into the minds of these serial killers and psychopaths when the FBI started to study them. And they're actually portraying in the show that all of these men, and this is true, this is not something they're making up, this is based on reality, all of these men had incredibly fucked up mothers who fucked them up. Now, I'm not saying women are the source of all evil in the world, but I'm saying one of the things I love about Snyder's movie is inversely, he gets the value of a mother's love to a child, specifically a male child, which I don't think Hollywood gets a lot because they don't show the positive and the negative, because I don't think our culture does. So I think this is a really important story for this reason, and maybe we can finally start talking about these things openly without people cringing and saying, oh, you know, you're a woman hater. Because I even, as I'm saying these things, I'm trying not to be apologetic with what I'm saying and to give disclaimers. But even as I'm saying this, I get the sense that people listening are going to be like, oh, this guy, you know, he hates women.
Well, I mean, false dichotomy, you can also hate women if you want. I'm just saying.
You got to say bro when you say false dichotomy on the show, bro.
Oh, is that the trademark? Do I have to use the trademark every time?
Yes.
Okay. False dichotomy, bro. Okay.
There you go.
Look, this is something, you know, to be a little less specific about mothers, but to be, you know, it sounds old-fashioned and it sounds outdated and all the, you know, Neanderthalic and whatever to say in 2017, but the emphasis on family and taking care of your children and not having children unless you can take care of them, and you can be an attentive parent, mother, father, family unit, whatever. Not enough talk about that in our culture and how freaking important that is. Now, you know, it's, oh, there are different alternative family units, and sometimes the mom can work and she can be out, and oh, you're a single woman who wants to have a baby. Like, who cares if there's a family unit or whatever? It's like, it actually matters. Like, it turns out there, it's physiological in some cases. It matters that much.
I agree. I mean, and to add on to that, there's this whole idea that the, you know, the, as I said earlier, the idea of the American values of the 50s, right? Like, that was the time in America. But there's this idea that that family unit, with the mother staying at home and the father going out and working and the mother taking care of the house and taking care of the children, there was the idea that that developed because of the patriarchy. And we were doing that just to control women and to have them be kept women and, you know, to have them not be liberated economically, socially, sexually. But maybe that developed psychologically, emotionally, because that's what people learned worked. Now, I'm not saying there are problems in that system. Again, I just felt the need to put in a disclaimer. But to back up what you're saying, Daniel, doesn't that make a little more sense now if the mother's love and attention and cherishing the child is important? Wouldn't you want the mother there at home taking care of them in their formative years?
Yes, totally. Totally. Absolutely. And this is not meant to say, you know, situations where mothers have to be single or there's, you know, the father is killed or absent or whatever it is based on something the mother couldn't control and, you know, she has to work. That doesn't mean she's abusing her child. But the point here is that we can talk about an ideal system and we can talk about it without having to be apologetic about it. And the ideal system is one where there are two parents at home and one of them, most likely the mother, is staying home and taking care of the child if you're choosing to have a family. And I'm not taking the Christian position here of the point of the woman is to bear child and go forth and multiply. You can rationally choose not to have children. That's totally fine too. But the point is, if you're going to have a family, then actually have a family unit. Everyone has roles in that unit, and it helps take care of children. End 50s rant.
Let me ask you a question, Justin, to sort of explore a certain point here. What you said that this the classic 50s way has problems with it. What problems do you think it has?
Well, are you asking me, like, how I would critique that sort of family unit?
Yeah, like, well, you said not to say that that system doesn't have problems. What problems does it have?
Well, I mean, it was more the culture at large. I mean, it was what Daniel just said, the idea that you can choose not to have a family or don't look down on people who are in situations that were put to you, that they were put in that were different. But, I mean, again, largely a lot of that has been built up by Hollywood and the media as to people being more hateful than I believe they actually were. Obviously, I wasn't alive during that time, but I don't think people were as intolerant and hateful of alternative families due to context than the media actually makes it out to be. I don't believe that people were ever that homogenized. I was simply saying, to answer your question again more directly, just the idea of personal choice being okay.
Yeah, right.
That's the only thing.
I mean, that's sort of where I wanted to go with that. But Daniel?
No, I just wanted to reiterate that's my only thing too. You know, if you're going to talk about issues with that system, it's just truly about personal choice.
Yeah, so like, I mean, the system itself is great if that's what works for you and your personal choices and your value hierarchies. The only downside was it wasn't the system itself, it was the fact that that system was just expected of you regardless of whether it was practical for your value, your personal value hierarchy.
Right, crowd. I think that's a great way to put it.
Yeah, now that leads us to something else, which is the issue is always about individual choice. It's about, do we enable people to make rational individual choices, or do we make this about collective judgment? Do we make this about all women should do X and all men should do Y? That's what they were saying in the 50s, and that was bad. But now it's saying, if you do this, if you're a woman and you do the choose the classic 50s mindset, that's wrong. Now that's wrong. It's still a collective standard. They're just advocating for the other side of it.
Right.
And further, I think, and further, Justin, I think the reason people may accuse you of woman hatred is, why does it have to be about groups? Why does it have to be about the males abusing the children or neglecting children versus females abusing or neglecting children? Why do you make it about, isn't just neglect the problem regardless of the sex of the parent committing it?
Well, to be fair, no one accuses me directly of it. I was just saying, you know,
sure. But I'm saying this is why they might think that, is because you are sort of, it seems that you could be collectivizing it.
So I mean, the science backs me up. I mean, it's not like I'm just making this up out of thin air and I'm like, oh, the women are doing it. I mean, Daniel just read an article that comes from a study that says it's specifically the woman, the mother figure that is not cherishing these children. And when you look at these psychopaths and serial killers that were studied, they all specifically had the pattern of the issue with the mother. And then we see psychologically the way women are different from men and what women provide. I mean, it's not collectivist in the sense that I'm saying people shouldn't have individual choices, but I mean, maybe this is just an issue of definitions, because I don't think it's collectivist, but I mean, I do have all things that are similar to me with other guys. I'm not different from them. There are baseline things that we all have in common. So I have to acknowledge the similarities, and those are the constraints upon my decisions. And it's the same thing with women too. So what's the word
just
for that?
I question that all of that is without a doubt true. But why focus on the differences? What about those very real and true differences makes them important?
Well, it's,
I don't see that very much. I see it as just abuse is a bad thing, and it just so happens that because the woman is the primary caregiver, you know, it's usually the woman, apparently, from what we're reading.
Yeah, and of course, I think you could extrapolate from this article and this study that if the father was the primary caregiver and the father cherished the child and was attentive to its needs, it would probably develop, and if it didn't, it wouldn't develop. But I think still there is, you know, it's still sort of gauche to say, like, oh, the mother should be the primary caregiver, for instance, and the mother should have this kind of relationship with the child, when I don't think it should be that controversial. I mean, when we look at into nature, just as an observation, it's almost in all cases the female of the species who is the primary caregiver. And I think historically throughout human history it is that way. And I think it's because mothers, whether it's nature, nurture, psychology, some combination of all the above, are more empathetic. They're better at understanding their child's needs. They're better at, you know, just the basic necessities of growing and literally nurturing a child into adulthood. So that's, I think, why the focus on the mothers, and especially probably why this study focused on the mothers, I would suspect. But I don't know, maybe I'm just a
no,
bigoted.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is it's fucking nature. I mean, I'm just observing reality and saying this is the fucking result of it. Like, that's the point. And I, as I also prefaced at the beginning, we've talked about the fathers and the worst thing they can do. And yeah, it is abuse when you just abandon your father or abandon your family. And I agree that that's horrific and awful, too. We see the stories and the effects it's had on people and the effects it's had on the children. And we know that's really bad, too. But it's important to look at who you are and what your constraints are. I mean, if you've got a team, right, you've got a football team, and for years your running game has been terrible. And people have just been going, oh, man, we need to fix this with our running backs, blah, blah, blah. And then somebody finally goes, yeah, but what about the wide receivers, too? They're really awful at running routes. You don't go, well, why are they also all of a sudden talking about the wide receivers? It seems like the issue is just we're playing bad all around. No, there is value to naming what the issue is specifically, because then you can fix it. Yeah, I mean, you can just go, don't abuse your kids. But specifically, as a woman, based upon what your unique characteristics are, what is the potential harm you present to your child? As a father, as a mother, go ahead.
To put it really simply, I think there is something important and unique about the child's relationship with the mother, and something important and unique about the child's relationship with the father. And those things are different. I just don't think there's any way around that. I think nature bears that out everywhere. So that's to me why the focus on the distinction.
I'm just very wary of accepting any of the implicit premises of
it's not postmodern bullshit. You just want to defend women, okay? You do this every time we're critical of women. Dude, that's what
No, but I never frame it in terms of the defense of women. I frame it in terms... I realize, yeah, we have this discussion every time, but I frame it in terms of, like, I can't exactly pin down if you're right or if you're wrong, but I'm wary generally of accepting some of the assumptions of postmodernism while trying to fight it.
It's not postmodernism, because, though. We're basing it on reality. That's what I'm telling you. That's why I'm telling you.
I'm just saying it's not obvious to say that. Just these ideas are subtle. They're insidious. You can catch them like they're a cold.
And what I am telling you is I am disagreeing completely what you're saying, and I'm saying this is an issue on your part where you don't realize that you need to defend women every fucking time we're critical of them. Every time.
That just sounds Freudian, like you're accusing me of something. It's like, oh, well, your motivation is really this. Like, I can't argue against that.
You can't argue against it, and that's why I'm saying it. So let the reader...
Yeah, but there's no evidence I can bring to bear. I can just say, like, no, I'm not defending women. I'm just saying that, like...
So I just said readers by accident. So that's why I say that. And you say your point of view, and let the listeners decide who they agree with, you or with me.
Well, yeah, I agree with me, so...
You're wrong, too, probably.
Nah. I'm not even necessarily trying to put forward the idea that you're wrong. I'm just saying you gotta be... I'm just saying it's an open question in my mind whether that sort of thinking accidentally accepts some of the assumptions of postmodernism, basically, because again, they're everywhere, they're subtle, and it's easy to catch them. It's easy to catch incorrect premise. You're like, it's so easy from talking to other people to just catch vague destructive concepts. It's like they're like diseases. You're constantly communing concepts with other people. In order to have a conversation, you need to accept certain common assumptions just so that your words mean the same thing. And a lot of time, and you can't examine every goddamn word that you end up accepting from someone else. So it's really easy to accept postmodern assumptions and not even realize it. So that's all I'm kind of just making you and the audience aware of.
Well, okay, we're going to move on.
You're
not
necessarily wrong. I'm saying it smells funny.
We're going to move on, but the last point I'm going to say is your argument that you just made is just as psychological, or as you called it, Freudian, as mine was. So that's all I'm saying. That's the point we're at with this disagreement. So Daniel, let's move on.
Well, I don't know what we're talking about anymore, other than apples and bananas and how they're different. At least that's what CNN wants to talk about or something. I have no idea.
I'm trying to go facts first. That's what I'm trying to do.
The cable network CNN launched its Facts First initiative recently, posting a short ad that features only a single unchanged visual, an apple. The voiceover then posits a situation where someone else may try to spread the rumor that it's actually a banana. An absurd determination, the video implicitly links to the spreading of fake news. Quote, they might scream, banana, 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 over and over again. They might put banana in all caps. You might even start to believe that this is a banana. But it's not. This is an apple. Of course, they're probably referencing Donald Trump, who's repeatedly attacked CNN and other news networks as fake news, who lie to inflame stories about him. He last name-checked the cabler recently, this weekend, in fact, along with broadcast outlets NBC, ABC, and CBS. And so this is CNN's attempt to get out in front of it? I'm not really sure what they're doing. Justin, what the hell are they doing? Is this an apple or a banana?
Daniel, it is whatever
Justin,
you
explain
feel
this to me. I don't get it.
It's whatever you feel it is. When you look at that picture, Daniel, do you feel like it's an apple or a banana?
I mean, how do I know how the apple identifies?
Well, there you have it.
I didn't ask. Who am I to say it's an apple?
All right. So you want to know what CNN is doing? I will tell you what CNN is doing, and then I will transition into a broader cultural thing that really bothers me about this entire issue. Okay. Let's go. So what CNN is doing is gaslighting. Okay. They are the ones who do what they are accusing other people of doing. And I'm not saying they're the only ones who do it. Now everyone fucking does it. But that is what CNN does. They are doing this because they don't want to be caught doing it. Because for months now, since the primaries, or whenever Trump started yelling it, they've been hearing fake news associated with them. Trump used the Saul Alinsky rules for radical against them for the first time, and they don't like that. The idea that you just associate with something with someone over and over again until the general public accepts it. And they know that. So their only solution is to gaslight back and to say that people are doing what they're doing. And it's fucking fucked up. It's despicable. We've talked about it before, how it's a tactic of the left. And when I saw this video, I immediately thought the perfect parody would be to actually have a banana, but with the same audio, because then it would show what CNN is doing exactly. Right?
And someone did that, right?
Right. The Daily Caller did that. Well, that's on themidside.com if you want to check that out. So that exists. So, Daniel, because this fucking confuses me a little bit because I'm fucking stupid. But so you have a picture of a banana, and now read.
I got a little confused,
right,
too.
So you have a picture. Now there's a picture of a banana. Now read the audio or read the transcript again.
They might scream, banana, 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 over and over again. They might put banana in all caps. You might even start to believe that this is a banana, but it's not. This is an apple.
Right. Just now that you see that, you picture that in your head with the banana. Do you see how that's what media does? That's what news does? Especially, I mean, transgender. Isn't that what they're doing? You may say that this is a man.
You might think that's a banana, but that's not a banana.
Right. Exactly. Right. 100%. But then the fucking parody by the Daily Caller ends with something about supporting Trump. And that's the thing that pisses me the most off about this fake news issue. I've been saying since undergrad, when you read news, when you watch news, ask yourself why it was presented in that way. What is their agenda? This has nothing to do with Trump. This is not an anti-Trump thing. This is not an anti-conservative thing. This is all the sides doing it because, as I said earlier in the episode, everything is political now. Nobody can just report the news. The ideal way of dealing with the news is saying we are going to report this as honestly as possible. Maybe we are accidentally biased, but we are not. As Daniel, you can back this up and you can tell the story about how it's not about truth anymore with journalism. Now the main thing is the story. It doesn't matter if the story they're reporting is true. It matters if the overall social truth or whatever bullshit, the social justice is achieved. And when we make this a debate about Trump, we're losing the forest for the trees. And that pisses me the fuck off because I don't want this fake news thing to go away. This needs to be addressed. So do you want to tell that story, Daniel?
About getting into grad school, that story?
Yeah, how they wanted you to renounce truth.
Yeah, I was a writing major in undergrad, and I wanted to be a journalist. And I was doing it right in the age of social media, and I thought that was interesting. But anyway, I wrote I applied to one journalism school, and it's the only one I wanted to go to. And in fact, I'll name it. It was Northwestern, who still has considered one of the premier journalism schools in the country. And I wanted to do it because they had this whole interactive program. Anyway, point being, I wrote my entrance essay on why objectivity mattered and how we could basically regain objectivity in journalism. And I got waitlisted at Northwestern, which was interesting to me. And then I got a call from the dean of the school, who basically said, look, you're an outstanding candidate, but this whole notion of objectivity in journalism, you need to give that up if you're going to be successful here. And we had this discussion, which to me was surreal, but the whole thing was based around, like, the point of journalism is not to give the objective truth, since we can never know the objective truth. The point of journalism is to give, like, the social truth or the social good, or I forget the exact phrase he used. It was some fucking bullshit anti-concept, basically being like, you know, we can lie in order to, put forward our agenda because our agenda is good and everyone else's agenda is bad. And so I basically said thank you, and then I withdrew my consideration from Northwestern and went into the more profitable field of rhetoric.
Now, how Wow. old were you at this point?
22?
Okay, yeah. And about how many people would you say apply to this grad program at Northwestern?
A lot. I mean, I don't know the exact numbers, but it's difficult to get into.
Is it in the thousands? The tens of thousands?
I wouldn't say it's tens of thousands, probably thousands, but they only accept like, 80 or 100 or something a year or something like that.
Okay. So think about that for a second. And this is why I'm saying this isn't a Trump issue, and it pisses me off that it's a Trump issue. I'm going to ballpark that this guy's over 50 years old. They're letting in only 80 to 100 people out of a pool of thousands of applicants. And they feel the need to call someone who they disagree with, to call a 22-year-old kid who they disagree with, to try to get him to disavow truth and objectivity. What the fuck does that tell you is going on?
Yeah. Indeed.
Why not just ignore your fucking application?
Would have been easier and less enlightening for me, but yeah.
Well, no, I'm glad they did, because it made all of our lives better on a selfish standpoint. But still, what does that say? This is not a Trump issue, and it pisses me off that it becomes that.
Yeah. Because Trump has his own version of fake news. You know, the greatest attendance ever for an inauguration. It was, believe me, more people. Yeah. That whole thing.
Yeah, and I think you'd hit the nail on the head, Justin, when you're saying that Trump just basically has his own brand of Saul Alinsky-style political tactics that he just uses, and the conservatives have signed on, essentially. They've capitulated to it. They've basically said, you know what, they used it on us, so we're going to fight fire with fire, and so the truth is just going to be consumed from both ends, basically.
Well, because it's very hard when you're basically abused for a very long period of time to not turn around and become an abuser. When you're being gaslighted by CNN in that video, it's very hard not to go, fuck you, CNN, I'm just gonna fucking bomb you. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
Right, but truth loses in the end. You cannot fight you can't really fight your enemies unless you're fighting for truth. It's the same with Prager, too. You can't fight these people unless you do so on the right standards, because what you do is you actually do more damage to your own cause than what the enemy actually did, because you represent your own cause in a way that is contradictory.
And I think that's ultimately going to be, the victory lap of the progressives, which is basically, yeah, we got the other side to disavow principle too, to use our tactics. So in the long run, we win, basically.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Hooray!
Because in a world where both sides disavow truth, like, who's gonna win? The traditional conservative viewpoint or the crazy social justice postmodern viewpoint that disavows truth? What I find kind of funny is how do you psychologically manage to hold the idea that there is no such thing as absolute truth and then, like, listen to this ad and feel a sense of satisfaction. I guess it's just evasion is the answer, but it's just that is a funny. I want to meet the guy who actually kind of laughs, you know, earnestly at this ad, like, good one. Good one, CNN. That's funny.
Well, it's
like,
because ultimately
I'd love to meet that guy.
You're 100% right that it's evasion, because ultimately you can't exist without accepting objectivity of truth on some level. It's just how you have to live, because you have to believe that patterns happen and you can predict those patterns, and that's how you live.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway.
Whenever someone in a debate says that there's no such thing as objective truth, I do the Leonard Peikoff thing where I just respond, oh, I'm so glad to hear that you're an advocate of objective truth. And then they respond by saying, like, no, I just said that there is no objective truth. I'm like, that's awesome. Yeah, objective truth all the way, baby. And they're like, no, you don't get it. Like, oh, well, I thought you said there's no such thing as objective truth. So, I mean, I heard you say, as a result, like, my opinion that you said there was objective truth is just as valid as your opinion where you think that you said the opposite.
Yep. Giant nonsense burger.
I mean, that's essentially what this commercial is. So yes. Now that CNN's mind fucked us all, why don't we move on to things that perhaps are a little more hopeful? Ah, that's right. It's time for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. I want to talk about a show this week that I never thought I would be talking about. First of all, because it's on Netflix, and most of what Netflix has put out has been terrible. Shut up, everyone, about Stranger Things Season 2. I'm not talking about it. I'm not going to watch it unless somebody proves to me it's thematic depth, has thematic depth. That's not what this is about. So sorry for all of you who have been watched it. Although for a second, before we get into this review, did you see there was an article that came out about, it wasn't binge watching, it was binge something else, and Netflix talked about the top 10 shows that everyone had to, like, binge suicide, basically. It was something like that. I say suicide because, Daniel or James, maybe somebody can explain to me, what's this idea that, like, Stranger Things gets released on a Friday and everyone has to have watched it by Saturday morning, like they have nothing fucking else to do with their lives?
I don't know, that seems pretty antithetical to having a value-based orientation in your life. To me, like, I might watch a premiere or even a couple episodes of a show that I'm looking forward to coming out, but, like, I have shit to do. I have to take the dog out.
Yeah, I have problems, like, avoiding spoilers on Twitter for, like, or Facebook or Twitter for, like, Game of Thrones when one episode airs, or The Walking Dead. Now people, like, will go on and they will spoil Stranger Things or a show that just came out on the Saturday after it came out, and they'd be like, well, don't go on the internet if you don't want to be spoiled. Watch the show. It's like, no, some of us are healthy.
Yeah. It's so few that it doesn't have to matter in the marketplace. So few people are healthy, Justin. Yeah, Bad card to play. Yeah.
I know. But speaking of so few people being healthy, that's what I want to talk about. So I've seen a lot of promos for a show called Glow on Netflix. Have you guys seen the promos for the show or the advertisements for it?
Is this the one where there are cops and there's, like, orcs and stuff?
No, that's Bright. We're going to talk about that in the trailers, but...
Glow Bright. Bright, Netflix, yeah. Whatever.
Is this the one with lesbians and afros?
Just because they're athletic women, Daniel, does not mean they're lesbians.
But they're lesbians, right?
I have not seen any lesbians, but I've only seen the first episode.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so does this show appeal to you at all? This show is called Glow, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. It's about the female promotion, female professional wrestling promotion in the 70s. It stars Mark Maron. He's the guy in charge of the promotion. It stars Allison Brie from Community, who's also married to Dave Franco. and they've been marketing it as from one of the producers of Orange is the New Black. So I was like, I am not going to watch this show. This is just going to be terrible, terrible naturalism. But I have news for you, Midsiders out there. This is not naturalism at all. In fact, it's completely romantic. Anything dark about this is meant to portray the negative, externalized perspective the main character played by Alison Brie has. She's an actress trying to make it in the 70s. They won't give her a part. They want to just have her read for the secretary roles and everything until finally she gets a tryout for professional wrestling, and she finally gets to start to see the value of it, and she trains for it, and then there's a giant confrontation at the end of the episode. And in that giant confrontation, it comes out that she was sleeping with her best friend's husband. We see that earlier in the episode. But the best friend comes to confront her. And when the best friend confronts her, her defense is, it just happened. Which, you know me, Daniel, how much do I hate that as a defense for any argument that people make for anything they do?
You pretty much hate it.
That was really helpful, that addition you just said right there. I was hoping you would give an anecdote or something.
Hateful statement is hated.
Yeah, I think that's one of the worst things you can do, because you're abdicating your, as James said earlier in the episode, your individual decision-making, your self-responsibility. And then the reply that the best friend gives, right, when they're standing in the middle of a wrestling ring and about to fight, this is the reply the best friend gives. And this could not have been written by anyone other than someone who is embracing romanticism and understanding the romanticism inherent in professional wrestling. Haven't you learned anything from that sad fucking scene study class? Things don't just happen. People make choices. They want things, and then they go for them. That is the thesis of the show. And embedded in that is this idea that learning about art will teach you about people and the choices they make. So that is even how they're conceptualizing art on this show. So I haven't watched beyond the first episode, but the first episode gives me a lot of hope that they're going to continue down this romantic path, and I see it having a really positive arc for the main character, played by Alison Brie. I see a lot of positive things being about the positive side of feminism and women's rights and women's independence in this show, and I see it being a really fun show about professional wrestling, especially because we're now, as WWE calls it, their women's revolution, where they have Charlotte Flair, the daughter of Ric Flair, who is carrying on his legacy, which is ironic because for years they tried to get his sons. They tried to have David do it. They tried to have Reed do it. And they were just terrible. But Charlotte Flair is carrying on the legacy of Ric Flair. They finally found it. And it's, lo and behold, his daughter. And we have women coming in from Japan. We have Asuka. We have Kairi Sane. These are all tremendous women. And then my personal favorite, Ember Moon. So to see the beginnings of this and see it as a show where they're romanticizing and dramatizing the beginning of women's wrestling, that's tremendous. And also, like I said, it's about the choices they're making. And it's just, even if you don't like professional wrestling, just the story about someone taking control of her own life and doing something great with it is tremendous. So those are all the reasons you should watch this show. And you shouldn't watch it if you don't like good art. So fuck off if you don't want to watch it.
All right.
Let me put it this way. I have not seen a better, but more inspiring first episode of a series in a long, long time. And they're only half an hour episodes, so I'm really looking forward to watching the next 9 episodes over a reasonable period of time, because I have things to do with my life. Such as the next segment of our show.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Bright is a Netflix original movie. And I often try to avoid bringing Netflix movies into the Trailer Takedown segment, because I agree with Christopher Nolan where there's something about the theatrical experience. But I had to include this one. It's a sci-fi dramatic buddy cop movie from David Ayer, the director of such movies as Suicide Squad. And the roles are reversed here. It stars Will Smith, but his partner is an orc. And the orc plays the role of the minority nobody trusts, you know, such as Will Smith used to play when he was an up-and-coming actor. And in it, they get this, I'm assuming it's a MacGuffin, a wand, and they have to protect the wand from all sides because everyone is corrupt and it's only the two of them, and can they forge the bond? Not a terribly original plot, but it's sci-fi, it's Will Smith. I am hugging this.
Hug.
Daniel?
Like Will Smith, like sci-fi, and I like the fact that this is a fantasy take on sci-fi, other than a straight up, like, he's not an alien or something, he's an orc and there are wands and swords. It's kind of interesting. I will say that this may come out of left field, but I recently watched the Babysitter movie that we talked about on here, the horror movie.
The horror comedy, yes.
Yeah, directed by Mick G.
Yeah.
And found it actually pretty damn entertaining.
Yeah, that makes me want to watch it more.
Yeah, you should watch it. It's actually really well done. It's not, again, it's not some sort of groundbreaking complex plot, but it's well executed.
Yeah, and but I think can we stop putting an emphasis on things being groundbreaking? I'm not saying we specifically do that, but yeah. That's another one of these things that, I mean, we saw this in the whole Harvey Weinstein thing. I forget who it was, but oh yeah, it was one of the writers that came out and wrote a long post about how he supported Harvey Weinstein, everything in his relationship with him. And one of the things was, oh, Harvey Weinstein is promoting new and original and groundbreaking movies, and that's part of the reason I wanted to support him. That's part of how these people get in. Can we just make good art and then we can worry about revolutionizing otherwise? Like, don't try and be Bill Belichick. Just be a good football coach first. Fucking win games. That's your job.
That's right.
Bill, and they ask Bill Belichick, they say, historically, are you worried about history? He goes, no, I'm just trying to win games. Let other people worry about history. Just make good art.
That's right. Point being that I think this looks like another movie that isn't trying to do something new and innovative. It just looks like it's trying to do something well. And so for that reason alone, I'm going to hug it.
Hug.
James?
I'm hugging hug. Just based on the gimmick of modern day, only we have three different races in the world, like three different races that are very different from one another. I don't know if you noticed, but there are also elves.
No, I didn't
notice. I think the implication is that the orcs are like the lowest class of society, people are like the middle class, and then the elves are like the upper class.
So is this like Lord of the Rings except a buddy cop movie?
Well, it's buddy cop movie, only we have the three of the species from Lord of the Rings.
Well, right, and the wand subs in for the MacGuffin of the ring, is what I'm saying.
Maybe this is a sequel to Lord of the Rings.
But then we need dwarves and hobbits, too.
You don't know. They might be in there.
They might be in there, yeah. I like that. I think that's a cool gimmick, and I like I like buddy cop movies, so I'll give this a shot.
Second trailer.
I, Tanya is a biopic about Tanya Harding, the disgraced figure skater from the 1990s who had someone club Nancy Kerrigan's knee. And in this movie, she is played by Margot Robbie, who is known to be Harley Quinn. This is more of a teaser. There's not much in this trailer. I will say two things about it. One, I don't like that they're seemingly kind of trying to make her a bit sympathetic. Maybe it's just because I'm from Massachusetts and like Nancy Kerrigan's knee being destroyed was almost as bad, if not worse for us, than O.J. Simpson, because it happened around the same time, if you guys remember. And Nancy Kerrigan was from Massachusetts, so this was like a Massachusetts tragedy when that happened. So maybe it's just my youth like making it so like, no, we can't defend Tanya Harding at all. But then also, the opening shot of this teaser is she's smoking, and then she drops a cigarette, and she goes to put it out with her shoe, except her shoe is a figure skate, and it cuts the cigarette, and it doesn't put it out. So the whole fucking effect of the shot, like where they're trying to, you know, call back to the old Hollywood iconic image of a hero doing that, and he actually puts it out, it fucking fails because she doesn't actually put out the goddamn cigarette. I mean, maybe that's visual symbolism to show that she's not actually going to be the hero. But I just, I can't believe that they're that competent. It doesn't play that way to me.
It doesn't, it doesn't hit the mark.
Yeah, it doesn't, and yeah. I mean, maybe.
Yeah, you can see what they were kind of going for, but it's just like, I'm just visually confused now, basically, or symbolically confused.
Right, and what I'm saying is I'm allowing for the possibility that maybe it makes sense in the greater context of the movie, though I will never find out unless someone like Midsider Alfred did with me in Glow. Sorry, I forgot to name check you before, Alfred, wow. Fuck you, Justin, you are an asshole. Yeah, Alfred, I'm sorry, I forgot to name check you before and say thank you for pointing out Glow to me. That's the only way I'm going to see one of this movie is if somebody tells me, hey, it's really good, you need to see it. Otherwise, I am tackling.
Tackle.
Daniel?
I tackled this movie when I read the title
Tackle.
Of the movie, which is, I will no longer watch any movie that begins with I, comma, and anything. It's a fucked out movie title. Don't do it. I won't watch your shit. Also, this looks like naturalism, so pass.
Tackle. What if they redo another iRobot?
Nope. Nope. Done.
I am fed up with just everything being Breaking Bad.
That will
Breaking
come back.
Breaking Bad was a good show.
That will come back,
Breaking
James.
Bad is a,
in Reddit on Reddit, we will address what you're saying.
Okay, we can. Yeah, but basically everything is the same. I have a way of classifying the sense of life of different movies, and every goddamn movie and show that's come out that's been good and or slightly even popular, same sense of life every single time. House of Cards, Song of Ice and Fire, Breaking Bad, Ozark, just everything, same sense of life. Exact same sense of life, and it was good. I like a lot of those shows, but stop it. They even made Star Trek have this sense of life, for fuck's sake. Stop it.
Say the words, James. Say the word.
It doesn't say tackle, you douchebag.
Oh, sorry, tackle.
Tackle.
Sorry, Alfred.
Final trailer.
Phantom Thread is apparently Daniel Day-Lewis' last movie, because Daniel told me it is. Is that true, Daniel?
Well, Daniel Day-Lewis himself said that his next movie would be his last movie and he's retiring from acting.
Okay. So this is his last movie. I hope he's happy with it, because I don't really understand the appeal of this at all. So it's a romance. This guy makes dresses with hidden messages in them. Then he falls in love with this woman, and I don't really understand what they're fighting about, but I don't really understand what I fight about in my relationship often, so, tackle.
Tackle.
I don't know. I mean, as little as there is in this trailer to actually glom onto, there is something appealing about the way this is done, and it's hard for me to pass up a Daniel Day-Lewis movie. I think for the moment, I'm actually tentatively hugging this movie pending future trailers.
Hug?
James?
What's so great about Daniel Day-Lewis? I don't get it.
He's amazing.
Please.
That sounds like a meta movie that's going to come out in like 10 years.
What's so great about Daniel Day-Lewis?
Yeah, starring John Malkovich.
I don't understand what the fucking hidden message is. That's a really good, I'm glad you brought that back into my mind. It's like, ooh, I sew little hidden things into, ooh, a little.
Well, the reason I brought that up is when the trailer started and he did that, I was like, oh, this is going to be really interesting. And then all of a sudden it became a romance movie. And I was like, what the fuck? I was promised something totally different at the beginning of this trailer.
Yeah. Right, like it's about the man and his work, and then he just has trust issues. It's just a dude who has trust issues in his romance, but then they make it basically the tone they made it was like he was gonna eventually murder this woman. is that the emotional tone you picked up on this? It's just like, oh, this is gonna end in her death.
Is bored an emotional tone?
Yes, there was that too. Or, no, I wasn't even bored. I was just creeped out. Tackle.
The most unbelievable thing about this trailer in its entirety is that this fashion designer is straight. So.
It's the most notable characteristic.
All right, let's move on and talk about what James was talking about in there when he was saying, hey, why does everyone like the villains or the anti-hero or whatever? It's time for Reddit on Reddit.
These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't host it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit. Why are people so much obsessed with villains in comics and movies? In comics and movies these days. I just realized the grammar on this
great
is...
Great sentence. Yeah.
It wasn't until I read that, I just like... It's one of those where you read it and you're like, oh, that's an interesting question. I will put that on the show. And then when I actually tried to read it now, I was like, this is terrible grammar.
So much obsessed.
So much obsessed. That makes it seem like it's a noun. But yes, why are people so much obsessed with villains in comics and movies these days? James, you want to go first since you were just talking about the whole sense of life thing?
I don't understand this in terms of sense of life. I do have a categorization scheme for sense of life, but I'm not sure how to connect this to my knowledge of sense of life. The way I see it, I have a very particular answer to this and other questions like it, which is that the hero in the traditional sense is a contradiction. The traditional hero is a contradiction. Because a hero needs to be an individual. He needs to be, because man acts, a hero is someone who acts morally, is a moral exemplar. Well, the moral exemplar has to necessarily be an individual. He has to be someone who makes a decision for himself. So, because to be moral necessarily, even if you're following a bad morality, means that you're making your own decisions for yourself. So the hero must be an individual. The inherent contradiction here is that if the hero upholds altruism, he has to necessarily undermine his own individuality. As a result, I think the deeper and deeper we go into the exploration of what a hero is, and the more people understand that, the more people are able to recognize how shallow and contradictory and lame an altruist hero is. And so as a result, whenever someone's an individual, they have to be a villain, basically. In order to make someone, to the extent you make them an individualist, you have to make them a villain. The problem is then they become a counterfeit individualist, someone who sacrifices others to their own ends. So it's kind of like everything else. It's just this false dichotomy that we just keep bouncing back between the two, and the real answer is lost.
Say it.
Tackle? What?
You didn't say the catchphrase, bro.
False dichotomy, bro.
There you go. What you're saying is very well taken. I don't disagree with anything you're saying. In fact, I think you can really see this as evidence with Superman's decision in Batman versus Superman, where we've seen since everyone who likes the movie try to fit it into these collectivist, altruistic narratives. Where, Superman is just the Jesus figure. It's Christianity he's fighting for. Or no, he's an immigrant figure. This is the immigrant story. He's fighting for the immigrants. It's never just he was making an individual decision to fight for his world, as he says, my world. Everyone has to try and redeem him by acting like he's, as you're saying, participating in altruism, where I think that is anti the point of what they're going for. So I think you make a very good point about how people see the hero and why they can't identify with the hero. But I think there's another layer here as to why they specifically identify with the villain. And if we look at Breaking Bad, I think it's something that can be very revealing psychologically. I think a lot of people like Breaking Bad because they see Walter White as admirable. Because here's somebody who was oppressed by the world around him. That's how he saw himself. His wife was a bitch. His students were awful to him. He had a shitty job that he was put in, even though he's a genius. And then what did he do? He resorted to breaking the law and violence and drugs to get what he deserved. And I think a lot of people feel that way. And when we look at what we've been talking about with Hollywood over the past few weeks with the Harvey Weinstein stuff, and we see Dr. Drew talking about we're living in an era of trauma, I think a lot of people have this victim mentality, so they have the fantasy of being like a Walter White, and that's why they see him as a hero, which is even more dangerous when you add in what you're saying, James. No one has any idea what it is to be an individual, to fight for yourself, because everyone else sees them as a see themselves as a victim of external forces. So even when we do romanticism, we romanticize Walter White.
Yeah. I agree with all of that, and I think of an interesting, perhaps a more tame example of this would be the movie Deadpool, which I really liked the decisions they made on the plot of Deadpool, because it's just a guy trying to save his girlfriend. He's not saving the world. It's none of this rigmarole, like, repeated stuff. It's just a guy. And by lowering the stakes to something personal like that, it means a lot more. And he's an individualist. He's just pursuing his own values. But as a result, what is he? He's kind of a lawbreaker. He doesn't really have principles. He doesn't believe in doing good. Like, you know, he's not a Walter White, but to the extent he's an individual, they had to make him a little bit of an anti-hero.
Well, right, and you use the word anti-hero, and that, to name check Midsider Alfred again, this is something he was talking to me about today, and I didn't really get a chance to have a full-fledged conversation with him, so, you know, here it is, Midsider Alfred. That's the idea, is anyone who's an individualist at all, they have to be the anti-hero. I mean, the main example of this, and this will rope Daniel into here, was Han Solo in Star Wars, wasn't it? Mm. He's the most individualistic character in that movie. And then the he came from him. Is Sawyer and Lost was very much based upon that. And who's the most individualistic character on Lost? Sawyer. Not coincidentally, reading The Fountainhead. This is the world we live in, where heroes are anti-heroes. So really, the only thing we choose between are anti-heroes and villains. We never really support an individualist. Isn't that what was going on in Star Wars, Daniel?
Yeah, totally. And then, I mean, how was Han Solo redeemed in that movie? How could he be a quote-unquote moral character in that movie? He comes back in the end and decides that he will fight for the rebellion, even though he's just out for himself. Even in that sense, he had to be redeemed, quote-unquote.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that actually I think is a little more tame, because they packaged, now this is a package deal, but I always got more of the impression that Han Solo was choosing pragmatism over idealism, and he finally, he was, you know, and so he's sort of the archetype of the disenchanted old man who wins his soul back when he, you know, saves Luke from Darth Vader.
I mean, I don't disagree with that, but I would say that's the same thing with Deadpool. Here's a guy who's been a mercenary who's just being paid to do the awful things or being paid to protect people. I mean, at the beginning, they show him standing up for someone who's being bullied. So he's definitely just picking the pragmatic, which is just doing whatever he can to achieve a little bit of happiness and not caring about the world around him. So I would say that even Deadpool is spun out of Han Solo.
Yeah.
We all know Star Wars created the best art in its wake, so we don't have to keep talking about it.
Do you have anything to add to this question, Daniel?
Not really. You've covered it in its entirety. I would say that simply as a consequence of both of what you've both already discussed, so this isn't the primary cause, just another consequence of it, is that villains get to be way more complex and interesting of characters as a result.
Yep. Yeah, we see this on The Walking Dead, where the villains are awesome and the heroes are mainly boring as fuck.
Yeah, indeed.
Second/last Reddit. Let's get a little personal here, guys. What instantly discourages you? I'm going to go first, because this is my show, and I like to go first. What it is for me is either being told or treated like I'm completely incompetent, or being told that there's no hope for a situation. At that point, I just throw in the towel. I go, fine, I'm incompetent, you do it. I can't do it, fine, whatever. Or, you know, there's no way of winning, it's a no-way situation. I just stop. I don't do it anymore. This first came out when I was playing video games when I was a kid, and there was no way I could ever win, so I just stopped playing. And that's I don't know if that's healthy, I don't know if that's normal, but it's just to the point that if someone treats me like I'm completely incapable of doing something, I'm just done. I'll walk away. I'll just quit. It's whatever.
Yeah. Mine's, I guess, in that same vein, but basically this happens in the work context mostly, which is I tend to put a lot of thought into my arguments for what we should do in a given situation. And in fact, on my team, we have a rule that an emotion is not an argument. So something like, ew, or I hate that, or that's gross, or whatever, for like video content, isn't an argument. You have to actually make a rational argument. But the point being that when I put work into an argument, and then someone comes back with, yeah, I just disagree. It's like, okay, well, why do you disagree? I just disagree. Okay, why? And they just go in this fucking retarded circle of, well, because I disagree. I just disagree, okay? You can't say that I don't disagree. And then yeah. I'm immediately like, fuck it, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
Do whatever the fuck you want. You're clearly retarded.
No, this is, I mean, it's similar to what I was just saying. It's like there's something inherent in you that they can't respond to rationally. And they're just saying, oh, okay, well, you know, fuck you, you're the problem. It's like, okay, well then fuck you, you're the problem. I'm out. It's the same thing.
Yeah. This happens a lot in writing. So I'll write something a certain way and someone will rewrite it and I'll go, well, why did you change it? And they go, I thought we should change it.
Yeah.
But why?
That's the worst when I read something and then, or when I write something, I mean, and then I have people read it and they go, oh, well, I didn't really like this. Why didn't you like it? I don't know. I just didn't like it. It's like, fuck you. I spent a lot of time thinking about this and designing it this way. If you can't explain why you don't like it, you can fuck right off because you're not liking it. It isn't valid.
Exactly. I've gotten down to the subversive point where if someone says, could you reword such and such around such and such? And I'll say why, and they won't give me an answer. I will literally go to my computer, change the font and the type size, print out exactly how it is and give it back to them. And in 100% of the cases where I've done that, three separate occasions now, they've all went, oh yeah, that works. That's much better. Yeah.
Huh. Wow. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. By the way, this is that is the ultimate INTJ frustration. that is just the difference between I don't know if the audience knows what this is, but Daniel and I have the same personality according to this test. Other than that, I'm an extrovert and he's an introvert.
Yeah,
I get similar. I have similar experiences, but for me, the person who does that just fades into the background. Like I don't get mad at them. I just stop really thinking about them. They just sort of fade into just the metaphysical background of just natural things that you have to deal with. I don't know if that's good. I don't get that frustrated at stuff like that. I just kind of like,
Oh, makes me, drives me nuts. Drives me nuts.
Yeah. Cause I kind of don't expect them to be different, kind of. I just expect them to be like that, so I'm not surprised when they are. It's not okay. Like, I stop taking them seriously entirely once someone does that, but
it's just the knowledge that they could be different and they're choosing not to be that pisses me the fuck off. It's like, you're a human being and you are in a position of power. Now I'm ranting about a specific person who... Yeah, I don't want to say it. I'm just going to say it because I doubt she'll ever listen to this. Now I'm talking about the CEO who runs the company that I currently work for. And whenever I send her anything, she takes 3 days and makes me redo it. And then I send it back and she takes another 3 days and makes me completely redo it and gives me new criteria every fucking time. And it's annoying because it's like, I put in effort. I do research. I come up with several variations. None of them are good enough. And she'll be like, oh, can you just make this more elegant? Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, fuck you. Fuck you.
Put it in a corset and a nice white dress.
Well, I did that. And then it's like, I put champagne glasses. And then it came back, oh, but people might think there's an open bar. Fuck you. You didn't tell me that that was a constraint. And it's just, it's frustrating, James, because they could be different. And like, I'm presenting them with the information. And it's like, especially in a work context, you hired me theoretically for this reason. So it's like you don't even understand the concept of hiring a person.
Yeah. You know, graphic designers deal with that constantly, and I do that a lot for various things. And it's always this variation. Every single conversation is a variation of this, which is, okay, here's what I want you to design, and here's the criteria I want, A, B, and C. And I go, okay. And I design it with criteria A, B, and C, and they look at it and go, you know, on second thought, I'd like criteria X, Y, and Z instead. And I go, okay, no way for you to have known that. before you saw this, before I put in all the work on this. And then I hand it back to them and it's, okay, having seen this, I think we should do B, C, and D instead. It's like, fucking die. Just die. Just die. Like, you have no...
You're just being victimized by sort of...
You're just putting in... You're just now saying random things into the universe and then hoping something comes back that you like. How do you have so little control over your own mental faculties that you can't think for 5 seconds beforehand what you actually want and what the actual criteria are for a given thing?
There you go. James, that is the perfect answer to what you just said. You're right, it is bad management. But life... We are living on a planet of people who are incapable of managing their own lives and then telling us who are capable that we aren't capable. And that is what is the ultimate thing that makes me shut down.
Mm. Yes.
That's why I don't have a boss. So.
It's not just that.
Last boss I had was just like what you guys are
describing. It's not just that, though. You're in the store and somebody walks in front of you where you're walking and they go, you shouldn't have been walking like that. It's like, you're the one who fucking is doing the wrong thing. It's everywhere.
Yeah. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just different. When that happens, I just, oh, another asshole. Like, they fade into the background. I just stop paying attention to
this
them.
Is someone, you are James, or you are someone who was born and raised in California. You are desensitized to this, is what this is.
I guess.
That's right. You're someone who could only masturbate to, horrible, horrible porn now. Because you are so desensitized. That's really what it is.
California.
You have to have someone literally slap you in the face. You have to have a punk ass slap you in the face to get a reaction. That's you, James.
All right. Yeah. Since that is something the audience has learned about James, why don't we all talk about what did we learn this week? Daniel?
I learned that when life gives you apples, you make a banana split.
You thought about that one all week, didn't you?
I thought about it for 10 minutes, okay?
James?
I learned... I mean, I want to continue. I don't know what I learned per... I don't have a specific statement I learned, but I want to continue exploring this, let's see, sort of disagreement we have, you and me, Justin, because we're not really sure what we're disagreeing on yet.
I'm not sure what you're disagreeing on. You may both very well know. I have no idea.
No, okay, so Daniel doesn't know. You don't know. I know what we disagree on. So
I tuned out about 3 seconds into that.
I think you may not. I think you may be mistaken about knowing what we disagree on.
Okay, you can believe that all you want. That's cool.
Yeah.
You're fading into the background.
It's an apple, damn it.
That's just more. No, you're not going to fade into the background because of this. You're just trying
disagree. No, I said you're fading into the background right now. That's not me. I am the hero of this story, motherfucker.
It's an apple. That's all I know. It's an apple.
If you want to be the hero of our story.
Oh, yeah. Something about the podcast. Oh, you can.
Patreon.
Yeah.
Hey.
Oh, what did you learn, Justin?
Thank
I forgot.
You.
I forgot you were here.
Sorry. I'm sorry, Justin. You faded into the
background.
You just
did try to fade into the background and host my show, James.
What did you learn this week?
I learned that if you stay in California long enough, apparently you get used to getting fucked in the ass. And I mean totally. That I'm making fun of James getting used to.
Yes, we know you don't have to explain the joke. Although that's part
I'm
of
not
the
explaining
okay,
it we... for you.
Okay, here we go. If you love the good pod that we gave this week, there's something seriously wrong with you. But nonetheless, you can hear more of it at themidside.com/podcast, where you can listen to all the old shows. We just heard from a midsider who's making his way to the archives, and that blew my mind. People actually going back to listen to old shows. It's incredible.
Yeah, I was like, wait, I'm not that important. What are you doing?
Exactly.
Speaking when I was thinking of that.
That's right. You can do that. And also, if you want to get these shows delivered to you the moment they are published, you can go to iTunes or Google Play and you can subscribe and you can get them delivered to your phone or other media playing device. While you're over at iTunes, click 5 stars and give us a 5-star review. Put down "Love it when James and Justin bicker" 5 stars. That's awesome. Or "Love it when Daniel's confused about what the hell is going on" 5 stars. And then that helps us raise in the rankings, that helps us beat out Welcome to the Beehive and all the other Night Vale crap that's on there. All the other Welcome to shows, fuck them, we're better. What else can you do? You can buy a shirt at themidside.com/store, classic logo, or
classic
False Dichotomy Bro shirts for sale now.
You shouldn't have said or, it's a false dichotomy. You should, and you should do both.
That's right. That's right. Also, you don't have to buy either or.
Also, I think I kind of want to make some Witness the Farce t-shirts. So if anyone wants to see that, I think we need one of those. And yeah. I was also thinking, Daniel, should I do a Star Wars May the Farce Be With You shirt?
Hmm. That was kind of the tagline of Spaceballs. So I don't want to rip them off.
What was their tagline?
I think it was May the Farce Be With You, in fact.
Oh.
Or something like that. It was close. Anyway. It's a good idea, Justin, but The Simpsons did it. So, what else do we have? Patreon.com/TheMidSide. Patreon's a platform where you can give us monies every time we produce a piece of content. Not monthly for the fuck of it, not weekly, and we just take your money no matter what we do. It's when we produce content, you agree to give us some amount of money, like a dollar, 50 cents, 10 bucks, whatever it is. It helps us buy hosting and domains and advertising, and it mostly helps us keep the lights on. We're obsessed with lights here, because lights are an apple. No matter how many people tell you they're a banana, lights are an apple. What else? Liberty.me, are they still syndicating us? I don't even know anymore. But thanks if they are, or if they were. Either way, love the libertarians. And the thing you can do above all else, regardless of money or time, is tell a friend. Telling a friend is the number one way that this show grows and we get more Midsiders and more people supporting Romanticism and more people supporting Zack Snyder and more people. We want world domination, goddammit. So, tell a friend, tell your mom, tell, tell, next time you go to a movie, a romantic movie, tell a random person that if they like this movie, they should also like Welcome to the Midside. That'll be fun and also creepy. Okay, but until next time, much love. Goodbye.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.